Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Wicked Side. As always, we want to issue a trigger warning. The things we talk about can get a little dark, a little distressing, and a little depressing. And today's episode is heavy on themes of slavery. So if that is something that is going to greatly upset you, this might not be the show for you. Otherwise, if you think it'll be okay, go ahead and join us here on The Wicked Side. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Wicked Side. This is Brenna.
Hey, everybody, it's Tom.
All right, and we're back.
It's been a good one.
It has. Oh, man. Anything new to share?
No, not really. Just enjoying the upcoming holiday and grandparents in town. It's been fun times.
Yeah,
it's been a good week.
And we've been getting some of the smoke from...
Oh, wow. Yeah, no kidding. So. We're getting the Canadian secondhand smoke. Uh-huh. America's hat is on fire.
One of my favorite jokes about that is like that Canada is like the apartment above the meth lab.
Yeah, fair enough.
I kind of can't even be mad at that. Oh, man. All right, so you want to just jump in today?
Oh, yeah. Let's get there.
All right. So, Tom, today we're going to put you in the shoes of someone who many might not consider an actual warrior, despite the fact they were 100% a freedom fighter. Today, you're stepping into the shoes of a woman who fought against all the odds, not just for the betterment of herself, but for the betterment of people who were being trampled by a cruel and oppressive system, and for a nation that was being torn asunder. I think you're going to figure this out pretty quick.
Okay, fair enough. Let me sit up straight. This sounds like I need to put some respect on this. All right.
Yeah. So let's start from the beginning. You're a female, born in March. Now, here's where we have some debate over the year of your birth. Some say it was 1820, and some say it was 1825, but others say that records put your time of birth at 1822. So you yourself said it was 1825.
Okay.
But again, yeah. You were born in Dorchester County, Maryland, in the U.S., and your birth name was very different from the name history would come to remember you by. So I'll just go ahead and tell you that your birth name is Araminta Ross, and your parents' names are Harriet Green and Benjamin Ross, and they are both slaves who worked for a plantation near Blackwater River in Dorchester.
Okay.
Yep. So, of course, this means you were born into slavery.
Yeah. Yeah. Traumatic upbringing. Okay. Check. We're checking all of our hero boxes so far.
Yeah. Your grandmother was brought across the ocean in chains. The woman who claimed ownership was a woman named Mary Broaddus. Broaddus had no qualms about splitting your family up and, in fact, sold three of your sisters. Your mother, tired of losing her children, protested vigorously when Broaddus was about to sell one of your brothers. Surprisingly, Broaddus did cancel the sale in this case. When you were 5 years old, you were forced to work as a nursemaid and would take beatings for something as simple and common as a baby crying. You know, like babies do.
Oh, sweet. So these were logical, sensible,
clearly. Fucking slave Apparently, owners. rich women just weren't aware that baby cried. I don't know. So...
I don't know. Back then, didn't you just shake them till they stopped?
I mean, he seems kind of that way. Considering how fast they went through.
Maybe that's how they all ended up that way.
Who knows? But yeah, you were also made to work as a field hand for a man named James Cook, who had you checking muskrat traps.
Okay. I mean, look, it's not the worst job you could be doing in that position. So at least you don't get beat if the muskrat yells out or something.
Yeah. You were also forced to work despite falling ill with the measles. Now, because we don't really encounter measles much today, cough, cough, thanks to vaccines. And yes, I read cough, cough, so.
Uh-huh.
So I figured I'd go ahead and describe exactly what it is and what it does. First, it is a virus, and it mainly targets children. In fact, in places where vaccinations aren't readily available or easily accessible, it is responsible for around 200,000 deaths a year today, most of those being children. The symptoms present as a dry cough, fever, runny nose, sore throat, inflammation of the eyes, white spots in the mouth, and a blotchy rash. The measles takes between 10 to 14 days to spread through the body. During this time, the person who's infected doesn't present with symptoms. According to science.org, the measles virus is spread from person to person through the air in coughed out aerosolized droplets that are inhaled. The virus typically first comes in contact with host lung tissue, where it infects immune cells called macrophages and dendritic cells, which serve as an early defense and warning system. From there, the infected cells migrate to the lymph nodes, where they transfer the virus to B and T cells. A surface protein of these white blood cells, known as CD150, serves as the virus's point of entry during this critical step. The infected B and T cells then migrate throughout the body, releasing virus particulates into the blood. The spleen, lymph nodes, liver, thymus, and skin and lungs are all eventual destinations for the virus. In rare instances, about 1 in 1,000 cases, the virus can cross the blood-brain barrier and cause dangerous swelling in the brain. Yeah.
Seems like you need a vaccine for something like that.
Yeah, right. Infection of the lung cells causes a hacking cough that keeps the virus circulating in the population. So that's some pretty intense shit to go through and do some heavy labor, especially as a child.
Yeah.
So there's that. You also had to act as a cook and a woodcutter. And when you were around 12 years old, you were... And this is where I found different accounts on this, too. One account said that you were asked to help assist, like, in the capture of a slave who was escaping punishment. And another one said that you were just kind of a bystander and in the way. But either way, the overseer threw a weight that was about 2 pounds. It was an iron. Mm-hmm. And it struck you in the head.
Oh, fun. Neat. Yeah.
So, again, at...
Add just...
12 years old.
Horrific weapons to the beating. Sweet. Yeah.
Yes. This injury was so severe and actually led you to having a battle with seizures and severe migraines for the rest of your life. Ugh. Yeah. Now, weirdly, every article and source I found skips ahead from this point to your marriage in 1844 to a freed black man named John Tubman, which should be a major clue.
I already knew. Yeah, I was just kind of waiting for a break in the thing. Yeah, we're good.
Which everyone, I'm pretty sure, knows. We're talking about Harriet Tubman.
Oh, man, the later part of her life. Let's go. Yes. I love her involvement in the Civil War and the beginning of. Oh, man.
So she changed her first name, actually, around this time to honor her mother. I'm not sure if this happened... You know, earlier or later, or exactly when. We just know it was around this era. But I wasn't able to find much of anything about your teen years. We do know some things, though. We do know that during your younger years, you began to develop ways to cope with the vicious and monstrous beatings. And sometimes you would do this by wearing multiple layers of clothing. Other times, you would just vanish and then reappear later once the coast was clear. We also know that your teen years came with harder work, which included plowing. Miserable.
Yeah.
Yeah, miserable. There's also
shit we literally use machines for now.
Yes. There's also a practice around this time in history called manumit. Basically, after the slave owner had decided to use and abuse them until they felt that person no longer had anything to give, they would then free them. Your parents were supposed to be extended this when they reached the age of 45, but the time came and went, and they were not released. Nothing was brought up.
Yeah. Promise we'll let you go. Yep, promise.
Yep. And also, you should know too, you were deeply religious, but eventually you began to turn away from some of the teachings of the Old Testament. See, around this time, abolitionists would argue that the Bible did not encourage slavery. However, there was the pro-slavery group who wanted to keep the barbaric practice going, and they would argue that the Bible, in fact, supported it. So it's possible that your views began to change a bit with these debates being waged. However, you did stay very religious throughout your life. Now, it might seem odd that a free man and an enslaved woman could marry, but apparently it was a pretty common practice in Maryland at the time. Your marriage wouldn't remove the label of slave, however, nor would it grant you freedom. And this is a problem because in 1849, they attempted to sell you, considering you no longer useful as you once were due to your health issues. You know, the ones they caused. Having a fucking iron thrown at your head.
Yeah, and yeah. You know, measles that you worked through, and mm-hmm. a life that was just, I'm sure, malnourished and horrible in every way.
Yeah. But then the man that owned you died, and everything changed. You decided you would fight back, and you and your brothers fled. Your husband refused to go with you, and he actually ended up remarrying a free woman in 1851. Now, we'll actually get back to that, because that comes back around later. Now, you didn't form the Underground Railroad. I know that's kind of like, I've heard people directly say that, mm-hmm. and it's just not true. It was already established, but you did use it to escape.
Nice.
Black and white abolitionists had already formed the railroad, and it's likely you and your brothers used this to escape on September 17th of 1849.
You mean she didn't lay any of the tracks?
Yeah. But things didn't go as planned. After a few weeks, someone realized that you and your brothers were missing, and they put a notice out in the paper. This made your brothers extremely nervous, so they opted to return. You didn't want to lose any more family, so unfortunately, it seemed to you like you had no choice, and you went back with them. But captivity was something you were determined to escape. And not long after, you left again, this time without your brothers. Using the Underground Railroad, you made your way to Philadelphia. Now, before we go further, let's discuss a bit about the Underground Railroad, just in case. I know we as Americans are taught about it.
Yeah.
I don't know how familiar anybody else would be. I know we have quite a few listeners in Canada and Britain, weirdly. Thank you, guys.
Hey.
And so I we don't know how much you guys know or don't know, so I'm going to give you guys the rundown.
Wait, do our British listeners know we're both ginger?
I don't know.
Oh, man.
We are. I mean, I don't know.
This is a soulless podcast. I don't know if you guys knew that or not, but it's not a soul between us. Ginger is all hell. I say the freckles are on the low, but there's red hair everywhere over here. It's crazy.
Oh, Lord. Now, before we go any further. Okay. For this, I'm turning to nationalgeographic.org and their online encyclopedia entry, which is a resource made available to anybody eager to learn or teachers who are looking for a good resource to work from. This is their entry. During the era of slavery, the Underground Railroad was a network of routes, places, and people that helped enslaved people in the American South escape up north. The name Underground Railroad was used metaphorically, not literally. It was not an actual railroad, but it served the same purpose. It transported people long distances. It also did not run underground, but through homes, barns, churches, and businesses. The people who worked for the Underground Railroad had a passion for justice and a drive to end the practice of slavery. A drive so strong that they risked their lives and jeopardized their own freedom to help enslaved people escape from bondage and keep them safe along the route. According to some estimates, between 1810 and 1850, the Underground Railroad helped to guide 100,000 enslaved people to freedom. As the network grew, the railroad metaphor stuck. Conductors guided runaway enslaved people from place to place along the routes. The places that sheltered the runaways were referred to as stations, and the people who hid enslaved people were called station masters. The fugitives traveling along the routes were called passengers, and those who arrived at the safe houses were called cargo. Contemporary scholars have shown that most of those who participated in the Underground Railroad largely worked alone, rather than as a part of an organized group. There were people from many occupations and income levels, including former enslaved peoples. According to historical accounts of the railroad, conductors often posed as enslaved people and snuck the runways out of plantations. Due to the danger associated with capture, they conducted much of the activity at night. The conductors and passengers traveled from safe house to safe house, often with 16 to 19 kilometers or 10 to 20 miles between each stop.
Gee-ha.
That is terrifying to think about. Lanterns in the windows welcomed them and promised safety. Patrols seeking to catch enslaved people were frequently hot on their heels. These images of the Underground Railroad stuck in the minds of the nation, and they captured the hearts of writers who told suspenseful stories of dark, dangerous passages and dramatic enslaved person escapes. However, historians who study the railroad struggle to separate truth from myth. A number of prominent historians who have devoted their life's work to uncovering the truth of the Underground Railroad claim that much of the activity was not in fact hidden, but rather conducted openly and in broad daylight. Eric Froner, is one of those historians. He dug deep into the history of the railroad and found that though a large network did exist that kept its activity secret, the network became so powerful that it extended the limits of its myth. Even so, the Underground Railroad was the heart of the abolitionist movement. The railroad heightened division between the North and the South, which of course set the stage for the Civil War. So that was their explanation of it. So I hope that, you know, gave
helped somebody out. Yeah. Yeah.
So like I said, most American children, we grow up, we learn about the Underground Railroad from our schools. However, there's a lot of debate as to the legitimacy of the songs that we were actually taught were associated with the railroad. There is a book, Scenes in the Life of Harriet Tubman, published in 1869, written by Sarah Bradford, who quotes Tubman herself as saying she used the song Go Down to Moses as one of two coded songs that would be used to help guide passengers for the railroad. By the way, you can find this book for yourself online for free. I found a copy just by Googling it, and I fully recommend it. It has some truly beautiful and moving passages in it, and includes a letter from Frederick Douglass to Harriet Tubman.
Wow, that's cool.
It is believed, however, that while well-intentioned, Bradford did exaggerate some of the details, and we will go into that. So okay. I understand why she did it, and we'll get into that too.
Okay.
So now to get back on track, despite our worthy diversion, in the end, you traveled around 90 miles on foot for several weeks. Sometimes you would have to pretend to be a servant in the safe houses you made it to in order to avoid detection and suspicion. But in the end, you made it. And you were quoted as saying, "When I found I crossed that line, I looked at my hands to see if I was the same person. There was such a glory over everything. The sun came like gold through the trees and over the fields, and I felt like I was in heaven."
Oh, I mean, yeah, literally glimpsing the light of freedom.
Mm-hmm. Gives you goosebumps.
It's so very literal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In December of 1850, you used the railroad again, this time to get either your sister and her two children or your niece and her two children. I used several incredible sources that are very, very credible, but they bounce back and forth on whether it was your sister or your niece. Either way, we do know that the relative was named Kasiah and that her husband was a free black man named Josiah Bell Lee. They waited until the day the mother and children were to be auctioned, and when the auctioneer went to have lunch, he snuck them into a safe house until nightfall. The family then boarded a canoe and made a 60-mile trip to Baltimore, where you were waiting for them at another safe house. From here, you got everybody to Philadelphia and successfully completed your first mission.
Nice.
Yeah. You also helped rescue your brother Moses on another trip in 1851. It was after this when you went back to your husband and discovered that he had remarried and was unwilling to leave. So you and Frederick Douglass helped 11 other enslaved people reach freedom instead. And this isn't like a solid confirmation because, again, records weren't really a thing when you're running a secret, you know.
Yeah, that's the organization. Whole point.
However,
well, it wasn't even secret. It was a loosely or a disjointed group of individuals with a like-minded goal.
Yeah.
And it was a bunch of people who were morally bound to do the right thing.
Yes.
And them not knowing each other was the anonymity and the protection they needed to not be ratted on. And I love it. It was just a collection of people who knew the right thing to do and did it.
Yes.
Ah.
Yep. But Frederick Douglass's own records and things did say he housed and was hiding around 11 slaves around this time. And then we have a statement from Harriet herself around the same time that said she helped lead 11.
Okay.
So the timing is too perfect not to.
Right.
And we knew that they knew each other and we knew that they, you know, worked together.
Right. Okay.
So it seems it's
yeah.
2 + 2 = 4, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And in 1857, you went back for your parents after they were facing trouble for protecting 8 enslaved people. By that time, your father had been freed and he purchased your mother's freedom. But your bravery clearly was a family trait as they were helping others. You got them to Ontario, Canada, where they were reunited with your brothers and some other family members on a bit of land, where they lived along with other freed African Americans. According to Britannia.com's entry on this brave conductor, she made 13 dangerous trips in and out of Maryland, freeing around 70 people. And this is where Bradford's account is believed to have taken some creative liberties. She claimed it was 19 trips and that was over 300 people. And while I understand what Bradford was hoping to accomplish, because Tugman at this time was not getting the respect or recognition that she deserved. And we'll get into that later as to what was going on with that. There was a motive for writing this book and kind of raising awareness in general. But I do want to emphasize how very impressive it is that she saved 17 human beings, or 70 human beings, 70 lives saved and freed.
And
that's an incredibly impressive number.
And then the fact that that happened in the past, how many bloodlines continued? How many people were offered, you know, how many, you know, generations after that didn't have to be bought out of slavery or, you know. Ugh.
The article on Britannica.com also says in its entry, Tubman displayed extraordinary courage, persistence, and an iron discipline, which she enforced upon her charges. If anyone decided to turn back, thereby endangering the mission, she reportedly threatened them with a gun and said, "You'll be free or you'll die." She also was inventive, devising various strategies to better ensure success. One such example was escaping on Saturday nights, since it would not appear in the newspapers until Monday. The railroad's most famous conductor, Tugman, became known as the Moses of her people. It's been said that she never lost a fugitive she was leading to freedom.
Dang. That is... Yeah.
And I get it. I get it. Because if somebody turned back, they could rat out everybody.
Yeah.
And ruin the whole thing. Ruin the whole system.
No. Yeah. Hey, look.
I don't blame her at all for that.
It's the classic. It's the person on the tracks or the trolley car full of people.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the one or is it the many? Which one are you choosing here? Mm-hmm. Because this dude could ruin it for not just the group and get all of you killed, mm-hmm. but ruin it for the future.
Yep. Now, you may be thinking, while this is extremely impressive, and she is certainly a freedom fighter, does this qualify her as a warrior? Well, strap in, because we're getting there. In 1858, you met a man named John Brown, who was pretty well known.
You just
got all sorts of happy.
Her quote about John Brown brings me to goddamn tears every time I hear it, and it is the most beautiful thing I have ever heard.
I don't know if I have that in here. If not, you'll have to look it up while I'm doing this. Yeah. He was an abolitionist at this time and probably someone else I could do a whole episode on. He asked for your advice regarding his plan. And this plan would happen on October 16th of 1859 when he and his men raided a federal armory at Harper's Ferry, West Virginia. He had hoped to arm the local population of slaves and freedom fighters and take the rest of the weapons to aid the effort. Because this is something I might cover later, I don't want to get too much into it. It's not his tale that we're telling today, it's yours. So it's important to note that, however, Brown himself called you General Tubman and consulted with you frequently. You find it?
I found one of them, okay. But it's not the one that I want it. Just give me a sec, because I not know. No. Okay, the quote is... His soul was so struck by the plight of slavery that it was as if he was in chains himself.
That is beautiful. Oh, wow. This one is a good quote about him. "Americans do not deliberate about John Brown. They feel him," says Dennis Fry, the National Park Service chief, historian at Harper's Ferry. "He is still alive today in America's soul. He represents something for each of us, but none of us in agreement about what he means." And that was from a Smithsonian article about him.
I can't find it, so I don't know when I saw it. I remember, you know, in my younger teenage years, whatever, mm-hmm. just reading it. Because the John Brown is one of my favorite Civil War historical figures, and so many people go towards, you know, Stonewall Jackson or whatever, mm-hmm. but, you know, the guy who was leading guerrilla raids on bases, you know, before mm-hmm. it even all popped off completely, it you can't... That guy did it before it was cool.
Mm-hmm.
That guy was fighting for freedom before it was fucking cool. That's what he was doing. He wasn't...
you know, and I respect what, you know, the abolitionists did and doing it in the peaceful way in the Underground Railroad. And this motherfucker wasn't having it the peaceful way.
I found it.
Okay.
It's Frederick Douglass.
Was it Frederick Douglass?
Yes, okay. Who made the quote. It's the same article. Douglass once described Brown as a man who thought, though a white gentleman, is in sympathy a black man and as deeply interested in our own cause as though his own soul had been pierced with the iron of slavery.
Exactly. Thank you. And it is to know that, I don't know. It's really easy to paint it in such a black and white brush as like, north good, south bad, or whatever. But, you know, there were more men like him.
Yeah.
But he was an example of what it was to stand your fucking moral ground. His quote about America's sins never being purged, but basically through blood.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how he believed it. You didn't just tell people to stop owning slaves. You started killing slave owners. That's what you did.
Yep.
Ah, good for him.
Yep. Yep, like him.
I got all excited. John Brown and Harriet Tubman are basically the super friends of the Civil War. Like,
you're not wrong.
It's Batman and Wonder Woman. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's awesome.
So, for the most part, it seems you stayed on the farm with your family, but you weren't someone to sit idle. And we're obviously returning back to the script. More work was needed to be done, and you were just the lady to do it. Because, as you might have guessed, around this time, a little event called the American Civil War started in 1861. She joined a group of abolitionists, and with them, she went to South Carolina, where she helped the Union Army by helping them care and organize recently freed slaves, and even helped organize a regiment under General David Hunter of newly freed men. Soldiers. Yep. So she
the inglorious bastards of the Civil War.
Yeah. She acted as a scout, a nurse, and even did laundry during this time in her efforts to help. She refused the rations the army tried to give her and made pies and root beer to make a living. She also worked directly under the Secretary of War, Edwin Stanton. On June 1st of 1863, Harriet Tubman became the first woman to lead a battlefield operation during the Civil War. General James Montgomery was planning on raiding plantations along the South Carolina River, and they planned the battle together. She even guided boats around mines that the Confederate soldiers had planted in the water. She rescued over 750 slaves during this time, many of whom turned right around and joined the Union Army. When the slaves realized they were being liberated, they would make their way to the boats carrying what they could. Tubman described it as the children of Israel coming out of Egypt.
It's apt.
Yep.
The biblical comparison is apt.
Yeah.
To the promised land, yo.
Mm-hmm. And when the war ended, you returned home to the farm just outside of Albany, New York. You continue to fight for those in need and for the betterment of others. You took care of your parents and took on boarders to help earn money. You took care of the elderly and orphans. Eventually, you met Charles Nelson Davis, a Union soldier who had been born into slavery. He was 22 years younger than you, but all the same, the two of you were married in 1869 and adopted a daughter named Gertie.
69. Anyway.
Then Sarah Bradford, a white woman and a fellow abolitionist, wrote your autobiography in an effort to help you make stable funds, make stable funds available for you. And you did, in fact, get royalties from this. So that's kind of why the creative liberties were taken, because despite all of her effort, she really wasn't collecting a pension or anything like that.
Yeah.
So
you got it. Yeah, nothing happens without funding you.
Yeah. And you did, in fact, get royalties. Oh, yeah, I already read that. This is the book we mentioned before, of course. And in 1874, a bill that was meant to make sure you received a pension was struck down. But after some heavy campaigning on your behalf, you were granted $8 per month in 1895, the equivalent of around $181 today, as Charles's widow, because he passed away in 1888. Then in 1899, you were paid $20 a month for your service, which was about the equivalent of $732 today. She was also an active member in the Woman Suffragette and worked with Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony. Susan B. Anthony even had a copy of Tubman's book.
Hell yeah.
Yep. In
just know our American flag was stitched by the same hands that read that book, god dang it.
I don't think she actually did, though.
Well, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's the popular story in either
way.
Yeah,
it is the popular story.
She sold a flag.
A flag.
There you go.
In 1903, she donated some land to a church, which had the provision of it was to be used as a home for elderly people of color. And it was called the Harriet Tubman Home for the Age. But also around this time, her health was declining, and the seizures were getting worse and worse. This led to her having surgery in Boston with no anesthetic. She literally bit a bullet as they operated on her head and opened her skull.
Yeah, it's a story I'm familiar with, mm-hmm. And like I said, the comparison to a superhero is not that far off.
No. 10 years later, she died on March 10th of 1913 in the same home for the elderly she helped establish. Her last words...
Oh.
Give me a second, sorry. Her last words were, "I go to prepare a place for you."
Oh. Again, just always forging a path and always sticking her hand out behind to lead somebody else to the unknown into something greater, better. The promised land. Just yep. Literally this time.
Yeah. So I'll close with some words from the preface of her book, written by Bradford. Her name, we say it advisedly and without exaggeration, deserves to be handed down to posterity side by side with the names of Joan of Arc, Grace Darling, and Florence Nightingale. For not one of these women... God damn it. Shut up.
I understand. I'm over here. I'm not going to act like my eyes are dry to this. I'm not going to act like that. But still, it's funny to watch you choke up.
Shut up. Okay. I got this. For not one of these women has shown more courage and power of endurance in facing danger and death to relieve human suffering than has this woman in her heroic and successful endeavors to reach to save all whom she might of her oppressed and suffering race and pilot them from the land of bondage to the promised land of liberty. Well has she been called Moses, for she has been a leader and a deliverer unto hundreds of her people.
Yeah.
And that, Tom, is the wicked edge of Harriet Tubman, the warrior conductor.
Goddamn right.
Yep.
It is one of my favorite, I hate calling it stories because it's so much more than that. It's,
yeah,
you know, that account of history.
Yes.
Is such a beautiful fucking thing to me. And
it is.
I don't know. It was the bloodiest war in American history. It was... You know, before and after the secession of the Union, everybody was Americans. So the repatriation of the dead, understandably, they all become the American dead. And I don't disagree with John Brown about sometimes you got to purge your sin through blood.
Yeah.
That's just what that happens to be. We, you know, some evils are only wrought that way, and especially when that evil wrought so much blood itself.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It, without that, what has America become? You know, that moment in history. What without those icons and those guiding fucking lights?
Yeah, and Harper's Ferry was a huge turning point for a lot of people. Well, for a lot of people, and it was one of those, I think, moments that held up a lot and said, "Look, this is how hard some people are willing to fight." You know. What are you willing to do for this? What are you willing to do for this cause? So,
yep.
Yeah. Yep. Just to go over some of my sources, I went to Harriet Tubman Biography on womenshistory.org, Harriet Tubman Biography Facts and Underground Railroad from Britannica, and Harriet Tubman Promotes Women's Suffragette, a Movement at Odds with Itself, Seneca Falls and Building a Movement, and that was from the Library of Congress, An Underground Railroad, NationalGeographic.org, and Harriet Tubman, The Conductor of Freedom on YouTube on the channel Biographics. So, yeah.
definitely look it up. I'd say if you're not, if you're, you know, I don't know, if you're not familiar with the story, or you just don't remember middle school or whatever it may be.
Yeah, she's a legitimate badass.
It's one of the best accounted and retold, you know, moments in history. It's great. Yeah.
Hella impressive, man.
And all the figures that surround her to this day. It's like mentioning off the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. It's great. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, Frederick Douglass, Harry Tubman, John Brown, but you know, I'm sure they fought vampires with Abraham Lincoln, and we all just don't know it.
This is kind of interesting. General Montgomery and her actually were admonished by Lincoln.
Oh, yeah.
For freeing the slaves initially, because he felt it was too soon, and he was trying to de-escalate the conflict, and they were like, fuck that, you know?
Yeah, you do what you gotta do out there, and we're just gonna keep doing what we always did, guy.
Yep. And basically she says, Tuckman was quoted as saying something to the equivalent of that Lincoln isn't going to win the war with the South unless he does this.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
So, well, you know.
Yeah.
She did a lot right in her life, so, you know, lots more in the field experience than him.
And clever. The fact that so many military men, like, bowed to her wisdom and her knowledge. And she was one hell of a scout. By all accounts, she was, like, she would, because she knew she would go unnoticed. So she would, like, dress up older than she was.
Mm-hmm.
She would sometimes pretend to read papers despite the fact she was illiterate in order to, you know, just be around and hear things, take things in. She learned where warehouses were. She learned where stockpiles were. She learned where troop movements. She, like, did so much that it's like, holy shit, lady.
Yeah, the never-ending list of...
Yeah. Like, holy hell. She was vital. It wasn't even that she's important. She was vital.
I can't believe. I don't know. Like I said, if you're just not familiar with it, or just become familiar with it, you won't regret it. It's a great story.
Yeah, and like I said, you can find that book online for free. I found it. I have a downloaded PDF of it actually on my computer. So. And I've read through it, haven't read the whole thing yet, but I've read through a chunk of it, and it is very, very moving. So, very interesting. So, yeah. And, that's the story of... And I like that, the Warrior Conductor, because...
Yeah. Definitely the episode name.
Yeah. I think so.
Oh, man. That was... That's such a, I love these. I get all the same feelings that I get when we talk about war heroes. I mean, she is, but.
Yeah, she's a war hero.
You know, any modern Medal of Honor winner or, you know, anything, I get the exact same feelings.
Yeah. I think we all, like, I know I certainly feel that, and I feel safe in assuming you'd agree with me that she deserved medals herself.
Yeah, sir. I mean, the service, the self-sacrifice, the
putting yourself in danger again and again.
Yeah, the service and self-sacrifice, the literal advancement of not just the military cause, but the general cause of freedom, both through official channels and not, either whichever route she had to take at the moment.
Yeah,
both literal and, you know, metaphorical. She carved the path. Mm-hmm.
She also, I don't have this in my notes or in my script, but I did see too that she had schools established too in the South to help freed slaves have skills and things to take to jobs and basically learn how to live outside of the system that they had been forced into.
Yeah.
And the only way of life that they knew at the time, and to help them thrive.
Mm-hmm.
In the world, you know, so caring on multiple deep levels.
Mm-hmm.
That is just, and it never stopped. She never stopped giving.
Mm.
You know, she never stopped trying. She never stopped fighting. And that's like.
Well, she even set it up so that when she couldn't physically do it anymore, her resources would continue the fight. yeah. that she had intended.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It is. Very. So, all right, everybody. Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode today, and I hope you learned something. And really exciting, really, really glad we got to talk about this person. And so thank you to any new listeners. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for any returning listeners. We really appreciate you guys. Thank you to the paranormal podcasting community for welcoming us and supporting us. And we just are really happy. We loved getting to do this. I know we've had to cut down to 2 episodes a month instead of doing 4 just because we're both so busy right now. And I know that's been kind of disappointing for some folks, but, you know, just right now, that's what we got to do. So.
What do you mean some folks? It's our mother. Our mother's disappointed that it's not more often. Love
that
you, Mom.
That is true. Mama's our biggest fan.
Love you, Mama.
So we are going to keep. I know the schedule's been erratic because I've been getting up when I can. Thank you guys for sticking with us through the erratic schedule because the numbers are still the same. I've noticed. So we're having a pretty steady base of return listeners. And thank you guys so much. We really greatly appreciate it. And we'll see you on the other side.
See ya.